on the internet and at 90.1 FM from high atop Burnaby Mountain. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.
Teachings in the Air with Sahil Thit, coming to you with a new set of podcasts for this year called 2024. So the theme this year is inner peace. You know, I come to this by meditation in December. I was end of December. It's been my habit to reflect on the year of 2023. And I'd given up doing resolutions, but would come up with what am I going to do differently or what am I going to do 2024. So as I was meditating on that, I thought, well, I'll look at my whole life. You know, I'll just think about it. And thought about my trials and tribulations in life and where I am today. And as I was thinking of myself as a worker bee for the people, I said, Sahil Thit, what got you to be an effective worker? You know, someone that's works with people and has a job. So I thought about that and the answer came to me is that I achieved inner peace. While I'm working, that I have inner peace. And I thought of that, and I said, that's right. Then, of course, then go into, you know, how this happened. But I said, I'm going to bring into 2024 inner peace. That's the mission for this year's podcasts of Teachings in the Air. To look at inner peace. To look for role models that live that way of life, that have inner peace. And the reason why I feel inner peace came to me because I thought of, you know, being angry, being depressed, being fearful, and that's a victim way of thinking that it sort of consumed my life to be angry, to be depressed, to be afraid. I was a victim. You know, the victim actually is referring to a sacrificial animal. That they would sacrifice, and that's a victim. You know, when we go through trauma now, they say we're victims. You know, and victims are often very angry, very depressed, or afraid. And I was all of those. So I want inner peace. It's a natural human urge to feel happiness, to feel contentment. And as I was reflecting, as I thought about, you know, I was born in 1949 and raised in this household that lived to principles about us working together, about fairness and inclusivity, that no one was above the other, that we're all to put in to share the work, to share the food, to share good times, to be with each other. And I thought about that from the age, you know, to five years old. I knew inner peace. I lived it. Laugh, play, cry, you know, get angry, all of those things, and feel comfortable in my own skin living that life. That it was a good life. You know, working together, feeding the chickens, you know, cutting wood, packing wood, you know, helping the household. It was a good way. There's a good way of life. So that's how I was until 5 years old, or just closer to six, I guess. You know, I started February baby, so. You know, but when I went to school, that's where I call it inner peace thieves. There was thieves in the education system. So unfortunate, because the thieves were adults. And I lost my inner peace in school when I was punished by being slapped around the head for making mistakes in arithmetic. And I remember that, I guess it's a shock because I didn't see it coming, but all of a sudden there's a slap on the side of my head, then the other side, so you know, slapping my around my ears and my head, sides of my head. Like a thump, thump, you know, and I just, oh my gosh, what is this? I didn't say that, but you know, it's just, I started weeping. I hadn't been punished like that. You know, I grew up, like I was saying, in that household where my father and mother, late father and mother, followed the way. You teach, you don't scold. They never screamed at us, swore at us, hollered at us, struck us with a slap or a fist or a kick. They were, you know, I learned this. They used a chop'em stick, you know, and my brother and I were fighting, you know, siblings, they fight, they argue, they tumble around and stuff. This time I picked up a 2x4 and I was in a club, my brother in the head. I swung and he missed. Thank goodness. Then my father seen, my late father, Jerry. Oh, and he calls me. He's calling, get over here. And he says, you get a chop'em stick off of that bush there. Saskatoon bush, so I got a switch. Come here, and I go there, and he takes it. And he starts switching my legs, you know, like, whoo, whoo. And it wasn't bruising me or cutting me, but a sting. And I know it's punishment, so I started crying, you know, and I'm crying louder, trying him to stop, you know. As he's switching me, he starts talking to me. And he says, Jerry, you don't ever. And I noticed there's a change in his voice. And I looked at my father, and I could see his eyes were watery, like he was going to cry. Don't you ever try to hurt anyone like that again. And I seen that emotion in him. I said, yes, Dad, okay, Dad, I won't. And he stopped. You know, that created a bond between my father and myself, because I could see how much he cared for me. He was taking care of me. So I learned from that. I'm pretty sure if he kicked me and swore at me and punched me, that would have taken inner peace away from me for quite a while until I dealt with it, because that's a pattern. So anyway, that's where I grew up, and that's where then when I got punished for making a mistake as a child. And now I started to experience fear, shame, felt alone, insecure. All of a sudden, I'm not sure about myself. My value of myself started to go down when I'm in the school system. Because when I was not in the school system, when I go home, I revert back to Jerry, you know, the human being in a safe space, loved and taken care of. So I'm in two worlds now. And then after I become a teen, I was sent to residential school. Now it changed again. As the fear is there, the shame, that feeling of being alone, even though in big dormitory seemed huge, of guys my age, a little older, a little younger. You know, and I started to see anger in the eyes of adults, anger, real anger. Then see violence. They didn't use rulers. The Reds, they had straps. The Indian day school, it was rulers, yardsticks and rulers and compass dividers, wooden things to strap us with. Either that or slaps with the open hand. At the Reds, it was a strap. You go see the dorm supervisor or the principal in the school for mistakes. And I was afraid there. It wasn't good. Make a mistake, it's public punishment. Strap you across the bottom. You know, so the shame on top of the pain was these men were inner peace thieves. They were stealing my inner peace. You know, it was a lonely time, hungry time. You know, there were moments of laughter with my friends and togetherness in that space. Play soccer, basketball, ping pong. Started to learn how to play chess. And I started to read more so at that level. Started to read books. It's a good escape and running. Because I do it running by myself and it's an individual thing. This running through the sagebrush in that country and the trails. They let us go off the grounds to go for a run at the residential school, and I ran. And it would bring me peace, but not inner peace. It would, because I'm away from the school now, and it was good for me. You know, but I go back, and I saw a re-entry. I wouldn't leave for that long. So that was what happened, part of the thievery of inner peace at the school. To res. And then when I left, 18 years of age, then I started drinking at 13. I continued drinking at 19, but I'll start to have drugs. So now I'm living the experience of the thieves. The inner peace thieves. They're in my dreams. They're in my memories. My triggers. So, because I'm looking for inner peace and happiness and couldn't find it, I found it in a bottle and the drugs. Whenever you're doing that, you make poor decisions and I make mistakes. You know, and years later, I see what it was. I was wounded in my mind, my body, and my spirit by these thieves, inner peace thieves. I've narrowed it down to that now. It's what I called them. Before, it'd be colonizers, government, white people, Christians. But I've narrowed it down to evil thieves. So I was impacted by part of the thievery was racism. That I'm inferior, there's something wrong with me because I'm indigenous. My language is wrong, my religion, our spiritual practice is wrong, everything seems to be wrong about us. I created identity that was racist. The whole motivation was to get their resources and the land, the gold, where I'm from, there's lots of gold, the timber, the forests. Rather than negotiate or share it, they used racist methods by saying we're inferior and we're not civilized. So that look in the eye of arrogance and superiorness to me is a racist, the real racist. I've seen them, I've felt them, I've watched this experience and that robbed me of inner peace to look at someone and they look at me like I'm nothing or with anger. I remember one of the times, the first time I've seen that, and that when they call it microaggression now, they got titles for it. I'm thinking, what did I do to you? What did I do that you hate me so much? I don't even know you. That's my self-talk. That's how I'm talking. I said, you don't know me. How can you look at me like that? Because, you know, their looks of disgust or, you know, like I'm ugly. I don't know how to describe that look, but that's what it's like. And the sad part is when, as victims, we internalize that. We swallow it and then it impacts my life. I feel inferior in ways. I don't feel I measure up. I won't make it. There's nothing there for me. So that racism is a real thief, too. Then other thing, that religion. I place blame, but not the, it's not the whole system. It's individuals in the system. And I say, why they outlaw our language or ceremonies? You know, they're beautiful. Our music. So in the name of saving us and civilizing us, each of our communities got priests and clergy, either Anglicans, you know, the Protestants or the Catholics. Some got Salvation Army, different Christian groups going into the communities to save the souls of the indigenous people. So unfortunate that they were unhealthy. Many of them were unhealthy. Come to sexuality, they sexually abuse children. You know, so another thief. I get depressed. I remember when I was in residential school, going to Mass every Sunday. So I have to, and it doesn't seem to be celebrating in any way. It seems sad and sort of drones on. That's the way I was experiencing it. I wasn't feeling uplifted. So that was a thief of my inner peace. Then there's the reservations, lands reserved for Indians, big time. It's like a jail. You don't rat out on people that break the law. It's okay to hurt people, to harm people. It's like a bunch of wild, I shouldn't even use the word wild, crazy people, together in a system that was meant to punish the wrongdoer. Isolation and not letting, you know, live in a jail cell. You know, that feeling of nothing's going to change. I think that exists in many reservations. There's poverty there. There's no resources to start a business. Most of the reserves, small plots of land. And they used to occupy mountains, two or three mountains, occupy and use berries, food, shelter, medicines, clothing, everything come off the land. Then there's laws put in place about living on the res. So it became like a negative atmosphere. There were communities unwell, depends on the leadership, because the hereditary leadership system was taken away and the hereditary leaders were trained since youngsters to be leaders. Now people get in with no training at all, responsible for the funding, the members of the community. Doesn't seem to be working in a lot of cases from what I see and hear. And then, of course, there's the res school, which is, to me, is a, I heard the statement, and I agree, a breeding ground for dysfunction. The residential school. Big thief. Lonely, hungry, afraid. Turned off about education. There's so much around this in the public, I don't have to talk about it so much, but it definitely... big responsibility for my taking my inner peace. Then there's RCM police that add to this by enforcing racist laws and policies from the residential schools and the governments. You know, and some of them were brutally racist, you know, violent, and we may become afraid of them that they could kill us. So individual RCMP officers also were thieves of inner peace. And removal or the 60 scoop was also a big thief for people that were taken and also the families left behind. I've talked to 60 scoop survivors and had no idea where they're from, because they took children and scattered them around North America, the United States, and Western Europe. People growing up with identity problems, don't know who they are. Trying to make them the same as the household, but their skin is different, the coloring. You know, so I can understand the problems that must come from that. That hunger, who am I? Where am I from? Must have been strong in them. So that has taken inner peace, too. In the latest one, these are all R's, as you can see, is reconciliation. When I first heard that, it was... Of course, I look up the word reconciliation. Reconcile means to mend a relationship that has been broken. And of course, I'd ask myself, what kind of relationship do I have with this country? Who broke the relationship? Who damaged the relationship? And I'd say, not me. So it's, to me, it's sort of like a pie in the sky. Because the biggest event that happened with this process is creation of reserves. And we all had to be on there, so we don't have land and resources to start businesses, so it's poverty. So I say in reconciliation, you think about how much I have to give up in this talk about reconciling and repairing our relationship. Inside of myself, in the way, in a sense, I have to say it's okay that you took all that land where we used to fish spring salmon. You made a dam and it's no more spring salmon there. It's okay, we'll reconcile. Or all those trees you took, it's okay. You know, or to say it's okay that all the gold you took and we didn't get one penny from it. It's okay. We're going to reconcile. We'll repair this relationship. So I say, people that talk to me, I said, that's what I have to give up. What do you have to give up as a Canadian? So I lose inner peace. It's a good word. Repair relationship definitely needs to happen, and indigenous people do that. Or they used to. That is a way of life before. Not so much now. Not to blame anybody, you know. You're raised one way, that's where you grow up. Raised to be an individual rather than a group, that's how you grow up, that's how you live. I know the 36 million Canadians aren't going anywhere. And the 1 million plus of us has no way to get them to live up to promises because we're a minority. So no way to me is going to be land back or compensation for stolen lands. That kind of reconciliation is not going to happen. So I say, what can happen? What kind of reconciliation can we do here? Can I say one-on-one? I can reconcile, I can form a relationship with a doctor, a nurse, a police person, you know, different people, professionals and citizens. We can work together. And I've been saying lately, you know, that there's a reason why we should do this, because all of the children are relying on us adults to do the right thing. I learned that from a health director, one of our communities. So those were the things that have been stealing my inner peace. You know, and I'm so glad I discovered a healing journey, which means I want to have wellness in my life. I want to have a sound mind, body, and spirit. So I entered a healing journey. Learned that healing is a road. It's not a destination. So I've been on this healing journey. First part of my healing was I achieved sobriety from alcohol and drugs. Once I'd done that, I started cleansing processes like juice fasting, running, you know, drinking different kinds of herbal teas, you know. It's in the 60s when I started doing that, or in the 70s. Health food, nuts, the hippies and stuff, granola and peanut butter and that kind of stuff. You know, I started doing that, cleansing, juice fasting with the intention to purify my body of negativity, training, running, ceremony, meditation and ceremony in sweat lodges, cold water bathing. And all during that time of ceremony and ritual, the important part of this healing journey came to me was to forgive. Forgive the ones that hurt me and hurt my people. And I was encouraged to do that, but I wouldn't. Why should I forgive anybody? I didn't do anything. Because I was looking at forgive as a Christian way. One of their ways is when somebody slaps you, you turn the other cheek. So I didn't want to forgive that way. But then I looked up the word, and it's an action, a verb, let go. Hey, I can do that. And I forgave the English for colonizing, Roman Catholic Church for letting loose pedophiles in the system. You know, Christopher Columbus for coming over. Gee, I've done this work of forgiving, letting go. And still learning that, and still in ways don't want to let go. And that's when that happens, I start to lose my inner peace. So this quest to be original, to be pure, because when I was a baby, I was pure. I knew joy, pure joy. I knew pure anger, righteous anger, not toxic anger. I knew the importance of being part of a group as a baby and a child. In that original state, oh, it was a good life. But once I became a victim, angry, afraid, depressed, I started to feel lost and no hope for Sahil Thit. feeling that our way of life is disappearing and it's going